Last week...
Where were we?
The mice were foraging.
Noisy plane up there today.
The mice were foraging.
Right, yeah.
They weren't supposed to go out during the day.
Oh, yes. Here we go.
The three brown mice surrounded the white one as they forced him to join the pack. Was the little white mouse right to be worried? Shouldn't they be turning back? Were these older and more experienced cousins right? It was safe and not dangerous? Oh, too early in this venture to venture to say. But recall what the poet Bobby Burns had to say about those best-laid plans of mice and men and how they're apt to go awry now and then. If it's happened before, it will happen again.
Guys, wait, stop, we can't do this.
Andy tried getting them to slow down, but they nipped at his flanks to keep him moving.
Pink Eye's a scaredy mouse. He's afraid to leave the house.
Hugging the overhang of a pew, they crossed the vaulted chamber to the other side, to a door that led to the basement below. Slipping under, down they went, descending 8 smooth stone steps, then across a concrete floor to a metal drain. The mice inspected it. Nothing doing. They searched around a garbage pail. All cleaned out, nothing availing. Then their noses caught a whiff of a heavenly scent, so bewitching it hooked their chins like a fishing line and set their noses a-twitching like humans do when they feel a sneeze coming on. Up there, the origin of the smell, up there was the prize. Andy could have told them, but he didn't want to assist in their enterprise. The route they took started with a footstool. That was their foothills. They mounted the 3 small stepladder steps. 1, 2, 3, then leaped across to an open shelf. That was their base camp. From there, another hop to the top of the stool. Then they employed a hanging dish towel as a boarding net, and climbing up, arrived non-stop at the lip of the stainless steel countertop, and hopped on. Before them in the dim light loomed the greatest object in the room, made of a shiny aluminum that reflected back their faces boldly in its sides. To a mouse, it was as big as a small warehouse. To a human, it was big as a bread box, for that is what it was. It had a roll-top lid fastened down with a clasp. To the mice, for all intents and purposes, it wasn't a bread box, it was a Fort Knox, and would have been one except for one auspicious fact. A one-time accidental act in which a heavy flower pot balanced above on the casement sill came crashing down and landed on the roof of the box, making a dent in its top, and much more significant, opening up a seam along the bottom at the back, functioning like a vent, releasing the heavenly aroma that was acting like candied catnip to the cousins. The vent functioned in another way, too, by allowing enough wiggle room for a little mouse to wiggle through. One by one, in the cousins went, while Andy stayed out and pleaded to prevent them from eating too much.
"Careful how much you take, you guys. Have a few bites and then let's go. If you eat too much, the humans will know. They'll find out."
Fat lot of good this warning did. The 3 gluttonous mice continued to gorge themselves non-stop, and the only thing that made them finally give in was a thirst that drove them out of the tin to look for some liquid. But from all that stuffing in, wiggling out was much harder than wiggling in. Took some doing, but at last all 3 made it. Then, as if to compound their sin, Zeke, Deke, and Eke stood as acrobats on each other's shoulders like a stacked giraffe and lay siege to a small bottle of wine, half carafe, while those on the bottom provided support, Zeke on the top concentrated on the cork. Pawing it and prodding it back and forth and gnawing with his teeth until he finally worked it free. Then all three gave shouts of glee and proceeded to make things happen by inserting down the neck of the bottle a paper napkin, which by capillary action quickly soaked up the purple liquid and transported it to their lips.
Guys, I know you're thirsty, but only take a sip. Don't drink a lot. Grandfather says you don't know what that stuff can do.
Zeke stopped suckling the rag.
Oh, yes, we do, too. We've seen every time Bobo has a snootful. He's a mean boar, then he collapses and snores. Then he wakes up and does it some more.
Then you shouldn't want to do it,
Andy pleaded.
Yeah, better get lost, Pink Eye. Don't want to get your white fur all stained purple, although it might look better if you did.
Then he went back to his slurple. In no time at all, they had made themselves sick. Andy said,
"Come on, guys."
Deaky looked at him with unfocused eyes.
"All of you want, we're staying here."
Blinking their eyes and heading on unsteady legs, they wobbled themselves back and wiggled themselves in, while Andy continued to fret, wondering how late it was getting to get. When at last they staggered out, Andy could see they were worse for wear. As worse as drunkard kings on a throne, one started to sing,
"Oh, give me a home."
Another held his stomach and started to moan.
"I don't feel so good,"
he groaned. Their teeth and tongues were stained purple, their lips a powdery plum red, and their eyes rolled around in their little wedge heads. Suddenly, Andy's paper-thin ears detected a distant din somewhere, a thump and a bum-bump. On full alert to what he might have heard, Andy tried to listen, but the noisy cousins wouldn't quit, butting their heads and clowning around.
"Guys, be quiet, I hear something." "Quiet, please, quiet."
But they refused to pay attention. They continued to riot. Then, all of a sudden, there it was, a bump. Boom. Followed by several more bumps. Goose flesh raised the hackles of Andy's hair as he recognized the sound of human voices floating on air. They were coming closer. One was saying,
"Oh, did you remember my makeup kit? Have you got it?"
"Yes, it's right here."
"And everything I need to wear?"
"Is already here."
"My dress?"
"Your dress."
"My shoes?"
"I've got your shoes, all right."
"Oh, I'm a nervous wreck. I don't know what I'd do without you two."
As soon as Andy heard the voices, he went racing round the counter nonstop, zooming like a white cue ball on a billiard top, running to each one of his drunken cousins to warn them of the danger. He had to shake them to get through. Then the stupefied mice, not knowing what to do, scattered in all directions, like billiard balls on a break. Reaching to the edge of the counter, they launched themselves into space, behaving like flying squirrels minus the glide. They landed on their bellies. They landed on their sides. Multiple slams that knocked their breath out. But still, they all got up and ran. All except for Eeky, whose cheeky and chin had made sharp contact with the stool on the way down and knocked him out completely, landing him limp in a heap as though dead. And he wanted to help, but too late. Here came the humans, and he had to join the escape. The cellar door opened. A light switched on. And three sets of footsteps began to descend. Zeke and Deaky dove for the nearest alcove. Finding there a door, slipped beneath its slot, Andy followed suit. Whether any of them knew it or not, darkness was what they craved. The chance to disappear and be saved by becoming invisible. And this perfect room did the trick. Until they discovered the walls were thick brick and there was no way out except the door they came in by. Even worse, there was no place to hide. The room mostly bare, excepting a full-length mirror and one white wicker chair. The frightened mice, tremulous with fear and held at bay, huddled behind the door and listened to what the humans had to say.
Look!
What?
There on the train.
Ew! Disgusting!
What shall we do?
Get rid of it!
How?
Pick it up!
I'm not picking it up. You, don't be squeamish. It's not going to bite you. It's dead.
Then you do it.
Or make Tilda do it. Don't be ridiculous. No bride should have to deal with a dead rodent on her wedding day.
Hurry up, you two. What's keeping you? Nothing. Well, I'm going to change.
All at once, the door the mice were hiding behind swept open, and the room exploded in light. Zeke and Deke dove left, Andy dove right. The first two found refuge in a cardboard box of shoes. They poked off its lid and dove in, burrowing beneath the white tissue paper inside. As for Andy, he found himself boxed in a corner with no place to hide, until, looking up, he spied what looked to be a white cloud suspended in air. If he leapt and made it, perhaps he could burrow up there. A billowy cloud, a cotton candy muff. Without hesitation, he leapt for its fluff, which just happened to be excellent camouflage, as far as these things go, when you happen to be born albino. Finding Andy now would be like trying to find a marshmallow in a field of snow. All of a sudden, the gauze of cloudy lace began to move through space, sweeping Andy with it, for he had falsely mistook the cloud, which was actually a wedding gown being lifted down from its hook. Then the cloud parted like a rent in a circus tent, opening up a gap to the sky, and down through this gap descended a human leg, pink and smooth and encased in frosted white hosiery. Bloomers and a garter completed the view, then another leg descended too, dressed just the same. Andy was struck stiff with mortal fear, and what mouse wouldn't find it frightening to be suddenly confronting all that white lace and bunting, and more flesh than the flesh pots of Tangiers?
Listen to that,
said Tildy, indicating the footsteps sounding overhead.
Here come the guests. The hordes are arriving. I don't see how a body could be more nervous than me.
You're fine.
Are my knees knocking? Well, so what if they are? No one can see it. I'm worried they'll hear it. It'll sound like castanets. Those footsteps are like jungle drums. They make me want to scream.
Tildy, you're fine.
Wait, where's the flower girl?
Right there. She's right behind you.
Oh, yes. Hello, little girl. Oh, the crowd is settling. Oh, no, it's getting quiet up there. All I hear are coughs. It's almost time. I'm going to faint.
Bum, 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 bum.
Oh, no, here I go.
Bum, 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 bum.
Faint me if I catch... catch me if I faint.
Never mind, get going.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum,
with the flower girl towing behind, the majestic bride swung out and wide. Then a man in a tuxedo pulled alongside as down the carpeted aisle, like a regal queen, the bride did glide serenely. Cruising into harbor like a majestic ocean liner, she was a stately ship, oblivious to the stowaway that was stowed away on her hip. But, about to be married, she may be forgiven the slip for not noticing the minute tugs vying for her attention coming from the petticoats in the nether direction. Instead, she was the cover of Modern Bride, making her maiden cruise, filing past ocean slips and pews filled with aristocrats and a few of who's who's. As for her knees, Though they were knocking considerably, they never quite faltered, and she managed to remain upright all the way to the altar. The minister intones,
"Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today in the sight of God and in the presence of this congregation to join together this man and this woman in the bonds of holy matrimony. If there is any person here today who knows of any reason why this marriage should not go forward, let them speak now or forever hold their peace."
Andy, the albino, did not listen to the speech being spoken. Peering down through clouds of gauze, he spotted the spot where he was, which was not that far from the mouse house door. This was the opportunity he was looking for. However, as soon as he made his first move to descend, he discovered, to his chagrin, that climbing down was going to be much harder than climbing up had been. Suspended on the lace ladder, he couldn't see where to place his feet. He had to cling to the webbing rose while feeling for the next rung below with his toes. Meanwhile, while this was happening, tiny tremors were being transmitted to a spine, which ran them like impulses up a telegraph line, delivering an urgent message to the now distracted bride. Behind her frozen tableau, she was concentrating fiercely on events down below. The minister was saying,
"Do you, Reginald, in recognition of the solemn and sacred nature of your vow, take Matilda to be your lawful wedded wife, to have and to hold, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, from this day forward and so long as you both?"
Just at that moment, Andy's secrecy was sprung. As descending another delicate step, he had missed a rung, which caused a sudden slip and made his forepaws lose their grip, flipping him like an astronaut in space and getting his rear leg tangled up in the lace. He found himself dangling at an awkward angling, upside down. Meanwhile, the bride, this side up, through sheer willpower, I suppose, had somehow managed to maintain her pose and suppress the firehouse alarm that was etched across her face. Still pretending serenity, but clearly, from the arch of her crown to the crown of her arch, misgivings like lemmings were starting to march. The primary question now to decide was who would be the first to faint. Although the bride was primed to swoon and play dead, the blood was fast rushing to Andy's head, making the skin beneath the fur of his cheeks turn red as though embarrassed. He knew he had to act fast, so bending at the waist in curlicue fashion, he did a sit-up past the knee, where he quickly began to gnaw at the ropes in hopes of setting himself free.
"And to you, Matilda, in recognition of the solemn and sacred nature of your vow, take Reginald to be your lawful wedded husband, to have and to hold, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, from this day forward, and so long as you both..."
Andy's tiny teeth parted the final thread just as Tilda's solemn vow was about to be said. And I hear somebody's bus. Well, we'll resume next week. Gym bag.
Gym bag.
Right? Huh? Love you too. See you next week. Yeah. Oh, what a sterling boy.